Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hi there, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. As we're going through the letter of James, in the last episode, we looked at how James talked about taming the tongue, how important that is. If we can control the tongue, we can control really our entire selves. It's much easier said than done. And as James points out, nobody's really ever done it except for Jesus, our Lady. Because we're sinful, we do need to go to confession. We do need to start again over and over again. And one of the things that he said is that the tongue can be used to bless God and also to curse our fellow humans who are made in God's image. And that ought not to be, as James wrote about. And there's a really powerful story that David Nystrom recounts about Winston Churchill. And it's amazing that Churchill was able to overcome this. Churchill was actually ignored by both of his parents. His father, and his name was Lord Randolph Churchill, absolutely detested his son. And unfortunately, his mother paid him pretty much no attention at all. He was a really poor student growing up, Winston Churchill. A lot of people don't know that. He only scored 53% in his English composition test when he was taking his entrance exams to Sandhurst. Now, Sandhurst was the famous British military academy. And so his poor marks seemed to kind of confirm what his parents thought about him, which wasn't too much. When he graduated from Sandhurst, Winston Churchill thought that, well, maybe my dad will be proud of me now. But instead, his father, Randolph, was absolutely beyond furious that Winston didn't score high enough to make it into the 60th Rifles, which were really known as a crack regiment. Randolph wrote a stinging letter to his son Winston, containing in part these words, and I quote, Randolph said, "Do not think I am going to take the trouble of writing to you long letters after every failure you commit and undergo. I no longer attach the slightest weight to anything you may say about your own acquirements and exploits. If you cannot prevent yourself from leading the idle, useless, unprofitable life you have had during your school days and later months, you will become a mere social wastrel, one of the hundreds of public school failures, and you will degenerate into a shabby, unhappy, and futile existence. If that is so, you have to bear all the blame for such misfortunes yourself." And he ended off this letter by saying, "Your mother sends her love." Well, I certainly don't, basically, is what he was saying. And so, wow, it's incredible that Churchill was able to overcome this. This is what his parents thought of him. Amazing to think that this guy really arguably saved the world in the 20th century during World War II. But it's a great example of how words can either build up, the tongue can either build up or tear down, to bless or curse. And let's try to do more blessing, much more blessing, and not any cursing at all if possible. James says that the tongue can cause a raging fire set off by a spark, and it itself can be set on fire by hell. And think about the incredibly destructive California wildfires that happen every so often. Very often it's only a small spark from a cooking element or something like that that can cause such a conflagration. We have to be very, very careful with the way we talk. But as one writer says, for the right talk, you need to have the right thoughts. Because where do these words come from? They come from our minds. They come from our thoughts. And again, the tongue is contained in a cage of teeth, but it often escapes, doesn't it? As one writer says. So let's look at the next section in James here, because he's really going to give us two kinds of wisdom. And the wisdom is going to drive the words that we say. So let's look at James here in chapter 3, verses 13 to 18, the end of the chapter. James writes, "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good life, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This wisdom is not such as comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, without uncertainty or insincerity. And the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And you're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. We're looking at the letter of James. And in this section here, James really talks about the two different kinds of wisdoms. It's very much an either-or situation. Your wisdom either comes from above, which is what he calls heavenly wisdom, or from below. This is earthly wisdom, worldly wisdom. And when he's talking about the world in this sense, he doesn't mean it in a good way. He's not talking about the good world that God created, the planet with all its life and vegetation, all that stuff, the mountains, the seas. No, no, no. He's talking about this attitude, this worldly attitude, the world that is human nature in rebellion against its creator. So he's talking about wisdom from below as being the bad kind of wisdom. It's earthly, and he even says it's demonic. Whew. And then he talks about, at the end of this little section here, the fruit of those two different kinds of wisdoms. They're two different trees. They're going to bear two different types of fruit in our lives. And we want to avoid the false kind of wisdom. So let's look at that first. Let's look at the false wisdom. There's really two main characteristics here. This is what he says in verse 14. If you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This wisdom is not such as comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. So there's basically two characteristics here of the false kind of wisdom that we need to avoid. Number one, envy. Envy is absolutely crucial to this evil wisdom. That sounds like a bit of an oxymoron, I understand. But so two characteristics of the false wisdom, envy, and number two, selfish ambition. There is plenty of both of those things in our world today. There always has been. Certainly the envy that people feel is fueled even more by social media. And what's ironic about that is people put forth images of their lives on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, what have you, TikTok. But how much of that is really real? Now, people are presenting very sanitized versions, idealized versions, airbrushed versions, if you will, of their lives, things that they're doing. And it can create a lot of jealousy in people. And so envy is something we always have to watch out for. But it's always a fool's game. It's a fool's errand. The devil always tries to trip us up in that way. But here's the thing. As another modern writer says, if you really are envious of somebody, think about this. Would you actually change places? Would you actually change lives with that person? And that means accepting all of the facets of their existence, not just the parts that you see on Instagram, but their whole life, 24/7, 365, all the stuff that you have to deal with, everything that they're going through. Would you really want that to be your life? Especially if it's somebody who does not believe in the truth, somebody who does not know Christ. Would you really want to not just keep up with the Kardashians, but become a Kardashian, knowing that they're driven by things that are very often this, like James talks about, this worldly kind of outlook that's very unspiritual and not from God? not from God. And so don't do it. Don't do it. It robs you of understanding all the great blessings that God has given you in your life. He's made you unique. There's only one of you. All the things that had to happen for you to get to planet Earth, all the seemingly random happenstance possibilities that led up to your parents meeting, the moment of your conception, their parents meeting, and all throughout your entire ancestral history on both sides of your family, think of all of these things that were completely out of your control, but God superintended the process to get you here to this life for a purpose. He's got a purpose and a plan for you. So don't waste time being envious of what he's doing in other people's lives. It's very much like what happened in that scene on the beach at the end of John's gospel. After the resurrection, Jesus is walking along, Peter is there, John is there, the beloved disciple, and Jesus has just got done telling Peter that he's going to be a martyr. And Peter's like, well, yeah, what about that guy? What about John? What's going to happen to him? And he says, what is that to you? What is that to you? My plans for him have nothing to do with my plans for you. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here, obviously, but you can read this. It's at the end of John's gospel, John chapter 21. He says, you must follow me, Peter. Keep your eyes on me and my plan for you. So envy is obviously a part of our world. Selfish ambition also is so much the case. People covet. And he's going to have a lot to say about this, James, coveting and what, how that can absolutely destroy our lives. But they can't be from God. These characteristics of envy, selfish ambition, they're not characteristics of God. They're not characteristics of Christ, obviously. Jesus says, follow me, take my yoke upon me, for I am meek and humble of heart. So these characteristics are not from God. They have to be from below. They're either from us. We can't blame everything on the devil. Sometimes it's our own sinfulness, our own draw towards what we know we ought not to do. And this is part of the fallen human nature that we've received from our good pals Adam and Eve. And so, yes, we can, when we're baptized, the guilt of original sin is erased, but we still have to deal with this concupiscence, this draw towards sin. We're always going to have to fight against that. So these attitudes have to be from below. They have to be either from us, or they could also be inspired by the devil, as James says, demonic. And so what's the result of living this kind of lifestyle, giving into this? What is the fruit of the false kind of wisdom? Well, he says it's disorder. It's absolutely nothing but disorder. In verse 16, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. So two things, the two rotten fruits of this type of false wisdom is disorder. God is a God of order. Think about the order of the laws of the universe, the order of the laws of nature. Everything about God speaks of order. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, in one of his writings, Spiritual Direction, he says to a person, virtue without order? Strange virtue. If you think that you can become a virtuous person without living order in your life, having a right relationship with God, a right relationship with other people, keeping the main thing, keeping your priorities straight, you're not going to be able to be a virtuous person if you're living a disordered, discombobulated existence. So we've got to really take control of order, order in our time, order in our interior life. It's very, very important. It's not just practical, it's spiritual. And James also says that the bitter fruit of this kind of false wisdom, he basically says it leads to every vile practice. Basically, every kind of sin you could possibly imagine under the sun is the result. Evil practices, sins. So we don't want that at all. And so he's going to contrast this evil kind of wisdom and practice with the good, with the wisdom that comes from above, from heaven. That's what we need to tap in to here. And so he's kind of building upon something he said earlier in the letter, this connection between faith and works, faith and deeds. As he said back in chapter 2, if you look at it, he talked all about faith and works. He says, faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Some will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith. So this connection between faith and deeds is really, really important when it comes to the wisdom and what we're tapping into here. If we have good faith in God, we're going to do good deeds. And the result is going to be peace with God and peace with other people. And peace within ourselves as well. This is really what the kingdom of God is all about. Having a right relationship with God, a right relationship with others, and even within yourself. Within the church, all of this is going to be peace with God and others in the church. Yeah, we're not always going to have peace outside of the church. We're going to come into conflict with people outside the church who are opposed to the gospel. Think of the recent murder that happened on Pentecost Sunday as we're recording this very, very soon after Pentecost Sunday. Well, in Nigeria, a gunman murdered a great number of people, tens of people, about, I think it was over 50 people on Pentecost Sunday, enemies of the gospel, enemies of the cross of Christ. And so we can't expect always to have peace with people outside the church, although we try to bring them in. God loves them as well. We try to evangelize them. But if we have bad faith, that's going to lead to bad deeds. And the result will be no peace with God, no peace with others, and very often will be in a bunch of internal turmoil and conflict as well. And so this is what we need to avoid. So all of this is kind of in the context of the church in James, because James is dealing with false teachers. Remember, he's talking about false teachers that speak false wisdom. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 19, it says this, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will thwart." So God's going to fight against this false kind of wisdom. And Paul goes on to say in the verses that follow there in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, he writes, "Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and Christ the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." So that's certainly true that the Christ is a stumbling block to some. The fact that Christ was crucified, how can he be the Christ? How can he be the Messiah? That's what Christ means. If he was crucified, I thought the Messiah was supposed to be a conquering hero. And then this idea of a crucified man being someone to follow to the Gentiles, that was sheer madness. The Roman emperor, the Caesar, was considered the living son of God. No. Jesus is the real son of God. The centurion at the foot of the cross knows that. As he watched Jesus die, he says, "Truly this man, not my boss, Caesar, was the son of God." And so this is, why should you follow somebody who laid down their life like this, who seems so powerless? And so this contrast between earthly wisdom and heavenly wisdom is really what James is picking up on in his letter as well. And so he wants to contrast this false wisdom, which we just kind of dealt with true wisdom from above, because true teachers speak true wisdom. So he actually gives seven fruits of heavenly wisdom. And it sounds an awful lot like what St. Paul wrote about when it comes to the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5. Verses 22 and 23, you know that. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. You can do that as much as you want. You can fill your boots with these things. Unlimited. So it sounds an awful lot like that kind of a list here when we look at James. Well, let's pick up on what he says here back in James chapter 3. All right, so this is what he says in terms of the heavenly wisdom. He says in verse 17, chapter 3, verse 17, the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, without uncertainty or insincerity. So these are kind of the seven fruits, if you will, of heavenly wisdom, of wisdom from above. And once again, when we look at this list, we see the parallels between the teaching of James and the teaching of his relative Jesus, his relative according to the flesh. James has totally assimilated the teachings of his master Jesus. And so we talk about purity. The wisdom from above is first of all pure. This is one of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. That's a powerful verse. And it has to do with more than just sexual purity. It has to do with purity of thought. That's obviously part of it. We're talking about pure wisdom. If you don't have this pure, unadulterated wisdom, if you will, from above, all kinds of other parts of your life might be adulterated, right? We of course, it affects that kind of purity, too. It affects everything. We've got to have it. We've got to have this pure wisdom from above. If we don't have it, it's incredibly difficult to hold any of the other virtues. But obviously, the sexual purity that God calls us all to as well is extremely important because we don't have that. And it's often been called holy purity. If we don't have that, we won't want to pray. We won't want to pray if we're not living that kind of purity. If we're not living holy purity, we also won't want to evangelize. Our desire to share the gospel will be snuffed out because we'll say to ourselves, well, who am I to preach to someone else? And by the way, God doesn't require us to be perfect in order to share the gospel, but we do have to be at least trying to deal with our imperfections, not making peace with sin. Because the moment you make peace with your sins, that's when you don't want to tell anybody else about the good news. You start to question, and what happens to some people is when they get involved in a life of impurity, they start to question whether or not the doctrines of the faith are really true. Maybe they're not true. That's what people think. Why? It's not because they don't make sense. It's not because there isn't historical evidence for this stuff. There certainly is. Now, some people aren't even aware of that either. They think that God is, in the words of a lot of atheist philosophers, they say God is the flying spaghetti monster, as if he's just completely made up. It's all phony fairy tales. There's no evidence whatsoever. Well, there's plenty of evidence. We've gone over that, but you start to question in your mind, if you're not living the virtue of holy purity, you start to question whether the faith is true. Not because it doesn't make sense, but because you want to try to rationalize your behavior. You like what you're doing, you like the sin, and you don't want to give it up. You don't want to give it up. And so that's what happens. There's a bit of a rationalization going on, or maybe a lot of rationalization going on, but when you rationalize, you're really telling rational lies, right? And I know I've used that one before, but it's a good one. It's a good one. But this wisdom from heaven is, first of all, pure. And then, of course, as James says, it is peace-loving or peaceable. Again, this reflects the Beatitudes of Jesus in Matthew 5. Blessed are the peacemakers. That's what Jesus said. And so those who are peacemakers really want to bring about what God desires. Now, it's not peace at all costs. It's not this idea of being a kind of a wallflower who will accept injustices. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the biblical concept of shalom. This is the peace that God is wanting. It's a wholeness. And I'll get into that a little bit more in just a second, but so let's bookmark that for a second. The peace from heaven is also gentle. It's considerate. That's the third characteristic. What's interesting about this one is that David Nystrom says that this word is usually associated with justice, administering justice. So it really suggests people that don't abuse positions of power. And this is important because James, what he's ultimately talking about is false teachers in the church as well. That the ideal is someone who serves the people and lives the message out that they're trying to teach, not a hypocrite, not somebody who's going to take advantage of their position to abuse others or for their own personal gain. The next thing he says, the next fruit of heavenly wisdom, is open to reason. Now, this doesn't mean, it actually could mean, this word in Greek could mean to be easily persuaded. Okay, so that, but it doesn't mean that somebody who is kind of swaying with the wind, who has no personal convictions, but it means that you're open to hearing reason, truth, and when you hear it, you receive it with pleasure because you know it's from God and you want to go in that direction. So, okay, you're open to the arguments, you're open-minded, but once you see the truth, you grab onto it. And he says this true wisdom is full of mercy and good works, and this is exactly what that very challenging verse in chapter 1, verse 27 is all about, pure religion, looking after orphans and widows in their distress, in other words, the vulnerable of all sorts, and keeping yourself from being polluted by the world. It's living with deeds. And then finally, he says it's without uncertainty or insincerity. So this is really about avoiding what James talked about, warned about earlier in the letter, being double-minded. If you truly have heavenly wisdom, you are not hedging your bets. You're not sort of casting your lot with, quote-unquote, the world or with God. You're 100% in. You're committed. Okay, so let me just get back to this notion of total peace. If we can have this heavenly wisdom and act and implement it in our lives, we're going to have the peace that God desires in the church, with God, with others. This is true shalom. Now, shalom means much more than simply the absence of conflict. There's a Greek word from which we get the term harmony. It's called homonia. And that's kind of a negative meaning. It just simply means the absence of any turmoil, the absence of any conflict. Well, so often we can just go along to get along, but we know there are deep issues. That's not what shalom is about. It means confronting injustice where we find it so that we might have total wholeness. It's a wholeness. It's health of body, mind, and soul, relationships with God and with others. This is the peace of the kingdom. That's why Jesus said, "Peace be with you," after the resurrection. And that's why if we attend a mass celebrated by a bishop, he'll start off by saying, "Peace be with you." And you say, "And with your spirit." That's the kind of peace that we're looking for. The peace that only comes from the peace of Christ given by the Prince of Peace. All right, we'll have much more in our next edition of The Faith Explained. We'll go on to look at chapter 4 of the letter of James. We're getting close to the pinnacle of his argument. But it's just been such a wonderful opportunity to share this series with you. And if you've missed an episode, you can go to the show page on relevantradio.com, look at our shows, find The Faith Explained. You'll find podcasts for all the series that we've done. Not all of them, well, some of them at least. And you can find also on the Relevant Radio app these podcasts, which you can share with friends. And also wherever you get your podcasts, be it Apple, Spotify, we are there as well. I'll catch you later today on the Cale Clark Show at 5 p.m. Central. And tomorrow at the same time for The Faith Explained. We'll see you then. God bless.